Primary Reaction Chamber.
We're Copper Raymond on.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 meters of time. Initial dangers crossing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on!
Mine's bug!
Well, I am back from St. Louis and Fear the Con 2. I had a great road trip with a couple of friends of mine. It's only about 3 hours away, so that wasn't too bad. I had just enough time to listen to Spirit Blade on the way up and Spirit Blade Dark Ritual on the way back, and that was great. If you still haven't figured out what Spirit Blade is, go back a couple episodes, listen to the conversation with Peter Franson, and go check out his stuff at spiritblade.net. It's very cool. But we had a great time at the Gaming Con. That was put on by the guys over at Fear the Boot, feartheboot.com. And it was just 2 days worth of solid gaming. We had three time slots on each day, Friday and Saturday. And I signed up for four of those with some breaks in between. I demoed Atomic Earth, the board game, demoed Saturday morning with the official debut, and you'll see some stuff on the website about that. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more here in just a second. But just generally had a great time. Played a lot of zombies and played some Atomic Earth, and I got to play some Savage World games. And probably the highlight of my weekend was the last game of the con for me was Scooby-Thulu, which you blend Scooby-Doo and Call of Cthulhu, and there you go. And that was just that was fantastic. Scooby-Doo starring the Harlem Globetrotters and Davy Jones of the Monkees. We all had a blast. Anyway, I talked to a whole bunch of people there, got to meet a whole bunch of people, and I got a few interviews. I've only got two that you're going to get to hear, because like a true professional, true professional, I forgot to turn on the microphone for one or two of them. So my apologies to Chad and the other guys that were patient enough to talk to me in front of, you know, a dead mic. But I did get to speak with Dan from Fear the Boot, and he got to tell us a little bit about his show and the stuff that they're done. And I got to speak to Ed Healy from Atomic Array, another podcast about RPGs. And these are also the two guys, Dan Repperger and Ed Healy, are two of the guys behind War Pig Radio, which is another thing you'll be hearing about in a little bit. So, without anything else, and this is not the only thing I've got coming to you today, I also, since Watchmen premiered, and I know that's the buzz on everybody's lips this weekend, I did take the time out to go see Watchmen. I'm a huge fan of the book, and I was really looking forward to the movie. So after the interviews from the con, you're going to get to hear my take on the Watchmen film. So let's break this down and see what this guy's going on.
Okay, I'm at Fear the Con 2 in St. Louis, Missouri. I've managed to corner one of the hosts. I'm with Dan from Fear the Boot podcast. What's going on, Dan?
Hey, Winston.
So what's going on here?
All right, we got our second annual local con. I say it's a local con, but actually this is a rare type of con in that this is a small national con. That last year we had about 125 people show up, and I'm hoping to beat that this year. Not sure yet, because it's still a little early on. But the actually minority of people here are local. A lot of them have come from as far away as New York on the east, and I've been told Japan if you want to keep going west.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been great so far. Just kicked it off. We've got our first round of gaming going right now, and I'm looking forward to how this is going to turn out.
Fantastic. You had sign-ups on the website for a couple months now. How many people did you have pre-register?
We had just under 100 pre-register, And so we're hoping that, because, you know, some people pre-registered aren't going to be able to make it. Plans change.
Sure.
So we're going to cross off, you know, some percentage of those. But then we know we've got a pretty large group coming in of local people later on for a War Machine tournament. And most of them did not pre-register or sign up. So we're, you know, we should, like I said, we should do pretty good here.
Fantastic. And this is Fear the Con 2. You did this last year just kind of on a dare or on a bet, wasn't it?
Not exactly. We had people for a while telling us we ought to get some kind of a get-together going, some kind of a convention going, and we didn't take it seriously. Like, you know, we'll do this, but nobody's going to show up. It's not going to work out real well. And but people kept saying it, so we're like, okay, fine. Let's just give it a try and see what happens. So we went ahead and put the stuff out there. I guess this would have started in late 2007. The con actually happened in early 2008. And we were blown away. I mean, like I said, about 125 people showed up. It was one day only at the time. We just did a Saturday. Had a wing night beforehand where everyone met up at a local restaurant, and we had about 75 people show up just to drink beer and eat wings.
Sure.
And then had the con, and by the end of it, it just had gone excellently. I mean, we're feeling our way through this, so there's some organizational problems, but just the quality of the experience that people were having, that they were telling us they had, was just phenomenal. It's like, okay, you know, we need to do this again. And so we started setting it up again then in late 2008 and started getting tremendous support once again. And as I was telling you before the mics were on, we're still trying to figure this out. There's some things we did wrong the first time, we got right this time. There's some things that we've already figured out we need to do better for the third time around. But nonetheless, I'm still really happy with the way this has turned out so far.
Fantastic. A lot of people are having fun. I had a blast last year. I dragged a buddy of mine with me. Neither one of us are really con-goers for the traveling and the noise and the crowds and, you know, the usual. But we had a blast last year, and we're back again this year. So thank you for putting this on. Now, Fear the Boot is an irreverent podcast about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. And when I was talking to Chad a little bit earlier, he said that just like the con, you didn't think anybody was going to listen to it, but you thought you'd give it a try anyway, right?
No, the story of how the podcast got started was, for years, we sit around having these living room conversations about gaming, just like every gaming group does.
Sure.
But enough people kind of overheard these, like, these are pretty funny, you guys ought to start doing something with them. And so, I mean, this would have been back in, like, the mid-90s. Podcasting did not exist yet. And so I'm like, you know, I just kind of sat on the idea for a while until in February of 2006, my friend's dad, who owns his own human resources firm, gave me a call and said, Dan, I'd really like to do a human resources podcast. Could you help me figure out how to do that? And I said, sure. So I went out, got some books, did some research, figured out, got him started. And despite doing something as absolutely boring as a human resources podcast, I found I was just having a blast doing it. So I started sending around an email to a couple of my buddies. It was originally me, Chad, and then three guys, Mike, Tim, and Kevin, who Tim and Kevin were on the original show. Mike came in later and said, you know, we ought to do something like this. And I collect hobbies. Okay, I go out and I buy things. Yeah, I go out and buy things, and they sit in the closet, and they never get done, and we kind of figured this was going to be one of those. You know, we're going to talk about it, maybe do a little with it, put it out there, but I mean, honestly, it's just us jerking around on the mics talking about gaming. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to tune in. You know, our parents aren't going to listen to this, and we're going to get sick of this 3 months later, and it's going to be gone. Obviously, we were wrong. I mean, the initial feedback was great. I mean, people really supported what we were doing. I owe mad love both to our early fans and also to the other podcasts, because the other podcasts at the time were extremely friendly and supportive and got us started. And we saw, I mean, at first it was 100 people and then 200, and, you know, over time, it took time.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
I'm summarizing 3 years here, but I mean, it just kept going and doing well until where we're at today, where, I mean, now we've got, I mean, a large number of people tuning in, and we've been able to put on two cons successfully and
sure.
Do some really great events at Gen Con. Haven't decided what we're doing this year at Gen Con, but had some really good time last year. Looking forward to what we do again this year.
All right. And you've done panels around several cons and given out awards. You were put up for an Innie last year, 2 years ago?
Oh, I think this would have been, yeah, not the one. If we don't count this year, since it hasn't occurred yet,
right.
It would have been 2 years ago.
2 years ago, right.
And had what's now, I guess, if you're into Internet gaming community, has become a fairly well-known fight we had with EN World.
It's legendary.
But we were nominated for that award. We ended up getting Instead, we were asked to present it.
Right.
And but after that, we were the second recipients of the Robin D. Laws Award, named for, obviously, Robin D. Laws.
Sure.
The first recipient was he himself, the eponymous award, I guess. And we were the second. I might be back in New York again this year. I don't know who's going to get it this year, but I should find out. And I don't know if we're going to be involved in that or not. But we've also been pretty active in some charities.
Sure.
I tell you, one of the things that has impressed me about the show is the people that listen to it.
Mm-hmm. You have a great community.
Yes, an unbelievable community. And that's the type of thing that I don't delude myself by trying to take any credit for. Because we can put out a show, and we do the best we can, but we have no control over the kind of people that listen or what they do. But these people have just been such unbelievably decent, supportive, awesome people. And just kind of on a whim, we heard about a gaming convention that was being held in Iraq, I guess this was about 2 years ago,
okay,
called Ziggurat Con. And they were holding it, I think, in Baghdad, somewhere in the green zone, and they were going to try and run a tabletop gaming convention. So we kind of put out the word to our people and said, hey, you know, we're going to raise some money for this. And they ended up, we collected by the time it was over, somewhere around $1,200. And we went out and were able to put together packs, where each pack was sent to a soldier, was to be given to a soldier,
right,
and everything you would need to run a game. It had at least one full source book, sometimes multiples, blank paper, pencils, pencil sharpeners, dice, character sheets. Because, I mean, these guys are sitting out there in the middle of the desert. I can't assume they're going to have a photocopier.
Right.
So, and then we even gave them, like, I think we gave them little bags, like little like canvas bags. They could put it all in to carry it. And we managed to put together 10 or 12 of those, and then take care of the shipping and send them all over to Iraq. And after that, we did a charity through World Vision.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, people just really amazed me because we opened up, we had a pledge on there, we opened it up, and in less than 24 hours, and I don't know how quick this happened, because all I know is one day later I went back and looked at it, it had already been bought out and shut down. And I don't know how fast that happened, but in some number of hours, these guys bought that out. We just started a third one. We're doing some stuff with the March of Dimes because a listener, unfortunately, to a birth defect, lost an infant daughter. And we are right now doing some stuff with them. The charity's called Raina's Wings. And I would give you a URL, but it's kind of this long, complex URL.
That's okay.
So if I can get to you to post
it. I'll get it later and link it in the notes.
Right. And people have been donating that. It's basically for the March of Dimes. So, I mean, it's a good, reputable charity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically to see to it that there is a day at some point in our future when all babies are born healthy. And so we've been really proud to be a part of that, but even more proud of just the outstanding, just decency and love and compassion that our community has shown just to one charity after another. I mean, it's exciting just to kind of put this stuff out there and then stand back and watch what happens.
And these are just the, speaking of charities, these are just the famous ones that people know about. Last year, you did one of your community members did Fear the Fruit, passing out fruit to gamers at the con, and then took the proceeds from that, or the extra money that was donated to cover that, to one of the local women's shelters. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct. Tony Mast, who right now is doing the Backseat Producers, and he probably has a couple of shows he's involved in, so that's the one that comes to the top of my mind. But yeah, last year he decided he wanted to promote health among gamers, and so he got in touch with some grocery stores and bought a couple large, like, crates of fruit, which he bought and then was taking around, I believe, handing out for free throughout the con, but he had raised money through it, through a basically just kind of a charity drive. And then, as you said, all the leftover money was then taken and donated to a women's shelter, and all the leftover food, same thing, was taken and was given to women's shelters or a homeless shelter. I can't remember the exact shelter it was given to, but all that fruit, because we had all this fresh fruit.
Sure.
That, you know, and we'd eaten a good portion of it, but there was still a lot of it left. I mean, he brought in an enormous amount, and so all that was also taken to a shelter, you know, to provide quality food to them for a time, so.
Sure. And this kind of thing is something that people don't need to, you know, get out and get into the national thing, you know, to donate to the March of Dimes or to World Vision. There are, you know, there are shelters for people in need of them in every major city and many, many small ones. And they're looking for donations, not just money, but also time and people to help with that. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's really something that deserves emphasis, because when we run the charities, great. But you know what? Even when we're not, that doesn't change the fact there's need all over the place. And also doesn't change the fact that we're not covering every charity all the time, you know, obviously.
Sure.
And right now, with the economy being like it is, a lot of them are hurting for donations. And so, you know, be educated. Look into these charities. Do a little reading on them, because some of them, quite frankly, are scams.
Yeah.
But if you be familiar with the charities, and if it's a good, reputable charity, by all means, don't hesitate to give to them, because they're doing good things, and particularly with the market being down right now, unfortunately, a lot of people, the first thing they cut is charitable giving.
Charitable giving. Now, this is an emphasis not just for charity, but of your show in general. It's to, I don't know if it's an emphasis, really, but the result is that you encourage your audience to take what they're hearing on the show and make it their own, to act on it. And you really, really encourage your community that way.
Yes, absolutely. That's kind of one of the ideas of our show is... We can't get on the mics and tell people how to have fun. We can't even tell them how to enjoy the games they're doing. What we want to do is just bring these people some ideas they may not have thought about, and even if they have, to at least bring them in a way that's entertaining, that's energizing, that gets them excited about the hobby, that gets them out there having a better time around their own gaming table. And, you know, that's really what we want to do. I mean, Fear the Boot's an entirely free thing. It's a free podcast. We don't charge for the shows. We don't charge for the community. I mean, even with these conventions, we just charge basically what we need to break even to get people in the door. Because really what we want to do is, you know, leave this world a little bit of a better place than we found it. And there's a hobby we love, and we have come to see just again and again and again that the people that are involved in this hobby, I mean, are just absolutely awesome people. And so if there's anything that we can do to just keep these people energized and happy and going, then it's our honor to do it.
Well, I got to say, that's what brings me back to your show every week is the passion and enthusiasm that you guys have for a hobby that you obviously love, and that you spread that around. Well, Dan, I sure appreciate you sitting down with me for a minute, taking time out of the con. I know you're busy making sure people are having fun and, you know, in an FTB 9000 compliant manner, right?
Actually, I'm busy trying to get a game finished.
Well, I'll quit by then. Thanks a lot, man.
Well, thank you.
I had a great time. Dan Repperger's a great guy. I wish I'd had more time to talk to him at the con. I wished I'd have remembered to turn on my recorder when for the brief opportunities that I got to speak to the other guys at the con, but c'est la vie, c'est l'amour, yeah? Well, I was also privileged to speak with Ed Healy, who does a podcast called Atomic Array about tabletop role-playing games. And so I'm going to go ahead and give you that, too.
Okay, so I'm here still at Fear the Con with Ed Healy. Ed, tell me what's going on.
Well, the first game session's still in right now, I think, and nobody's gotten out. But, you know, we're sitting here eating pizza and drinking some soda and checking out the vendor room right here. It's a good con so far. The wing night last night was awesome. A lot of nice people here, a lot of people that I have never met before in person.
Yeah.
We've got some videos we've been taking because Tex isn't here. So if you're on the Facebook group, you can go see them. There's a nice series up there, an homage to the missing host, if you will.
Now, you're not one of the regular hosts on the show, on the Fear the Boot show, are you?
No, I've been on three times, but mostly just by invitation.
Sure. So how many games are you signed up for this weekend, any?
Well, there's a pickup game tomorrow called Meth Zombies. That's the short name of
it.
We basically made it up last night over drinks. So,
nice.
There's a longer name of it, but I won't spoil it. I will let the GM get on the boards and tell everybody about it. But let's just say it involves kosher pigs in space.
I don't even know how to follow that. I don't think that can be followed.
Well, you know, I'll let the GM explain it. There's really no way to explain it.
Okay, so people have to find that on the Fear the Boot forums after the show drops. That's fine. But you're big into gaming. You do two gaming podcasts. Tell me a little bit about those.
Well, the first one the first one we did is Atomic Array. It's a bi-weekly show where we take one game or gaming line that we like and we talk about why we like it. So we started with Colonial Gothic from Rogue Games on July 4th last year, kind of fitting. We've been doing it 2 weeks ever since. We missed one right around Gen Con, but you know, we like to get the designers on there, tell them what we like about their stuff, ask them for some interesting information about it, and just kind of jazz other people about what we like. We've done some a lot of indie stuff, you know, a lot of smaller stuff, but we've also done most recently like Scion from White Wolf and. Yeah, and that's not exactly an indie, but, you know, we don't really care as long as we like it. We haven't really done, we've only done one board game. We'd like to do more non-role-playing game stuff, but my background's in role-playing games, so, you know, it's a little bit easier to get those.
Well, it's more accessible.
Yeah, exactly. Closet, hallway, den, yeah, everything.
Neighbor's house?
No. But yeah, you know, we have a lot of games that we've seen over the years. We did Cthulhu Tech, which they're demoing right now in the other room, and Alpha Omega from Mindstorm Labs, two games that Ronan and I found that we really wanted to talk about, and it took us a little while to get the designers lined up to talk about it, but we really like finding new games that we want to really introduce people to, and that's what this show's for, really.
New games or new and classic games?
Well, actually, I've been trying to get a hold of the designer for Whispering Vault, because I love Whispering Vault.
Nice.
But the guy will not return emails.
Oh.
I've been on his boards, I've been, you know, on his site, I think he might have just dropped off the face of the planet. But if anybody out there knows how I can get a hold of the designer for Whispering Vault, you need to email me. ephealy@ephealy.com, or go to atomicarray.com and just hit us there. But I need Whispering Vault, mwahaha. No, the day I can get a hold of that dude, it's so totally going to be a feature on Atomic Array.
Nice. Now, are you part of the sub-cult on the boards that's into Justifiers?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm a booter, but I appreciate what they do. I like the people on the boards. I think I started actually, you know what, Fear the Con, the first Fear the Con.
Sure.
I wasn't at, but I had just come back from Iraq and had emailed Dan, and I was impressed with the response by it, and that's where we started talking, and then I met him at Origins, and no, at Gamma Trade Show and at Gen Con last year, so we sparked up a relationship, and that's why I kind of came over and started hanging out on the boards. It's a great show, and it's a great community, so...
Nice. Now, that's your first podcast, Atomic Array, and what's the other one you do?
Oh, well, a month and a half ago, we started RPG Countdown. It's basically, you know, Casey Kasem meets role-playing games. We take the best-selling 10 RPG products off of one bookshelf, which is RPG Now and Drive-Thru RPG. I try to augment that with retail sales as much as I can, but retailers have traditionally not been happy about selling, you know, telling their sales figures.
Right.
So when I can get the figures, I add that to the list. But by and large, it's, you know, the hottest selling stuff on those two sites, and they share that numbers with me. Actually, they're the show sponsor. RPG Now has agreed to sponsor the show. And yeah, so, you know, we go down and, you know, let's say number one is, you know, the Widget role-playing game. We'll talk to, you know, John Smith, the designer, and get like 20 seconds to a minute. Either tell us about the game, tell us what he likes, you know, the most about it, or some interesting anecdote about how he was, you know, at Taco Bell and, you know, eating a chalupa and goes, oh, well, that makes something cool, and, you know, whatever. We've had stories about, you know, SpongeBob on there and stuff, but it's all information from the designers or somebody involved about why their game is so interesting, you know. And we just run through that in 15 minutes. So 10 games in 15 minutes, boom, 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 Casey Kasem style. And it's interesting. It's light fare. So,
yeah. Nice. Now, you said you're really into gaming. How long have you been in this hobby?
Well, let's see, third grade. So, 1981, 1982.
Okay.
A while. On the last episode of Tom McRae, I was talking about Master of Puppets, the CD, Metallica, simply because it was reminding me of fourth grade when I'd go over to my buddy's house and we'd watch some WWF and then we'd pop in some metal and roll some dice, you know.
Nice.
You know, back then it was just straight up, you know, I1, I2 type stuff, you know.
Yeah.
There was no advance anything. You know,
yeah.
But, I mean, for a while, I got away from it later in my high school career as I was playing a lot of sports and everything.
Okay.
But in college, I got right back in, and it's been downhill ever since, so.
Yeah, you never fully recover from this, do you?
I don't want to.
No,
I like it. I like being a gamer, you know. It's
all right.
Fun.
Cool. Well, Ed, thanks a lot. And what's your show again?
Atomic Array.
Atomic Array, and that's the website is atomicarray.com?
That is correct.
All right, appreciate you taking time to talk to me.
Fear the Con 2, I can't say enough about it. I had such a great time. Also, I premiered Atomic Earth, the board game, and that should be available in the products page on the website, criticalpressmedia.com, for purchase, and you will begin seeing supplemental and support material appearing on the website in rapid order fashion, just as quickly as I can get it going. Briefly, it's a tile-laying board game where you are sent out into an atomic-fueled wilderness to gather shards of quantum energy that are cast off when the giant radioactive atomic monsters that live in the wilderness go to war with each other. Gather this energy, refine it into an elemental matrix, and bring it back to the city that you live in before the monsters step on you. Atomic Earth, it's great fun, and you're going to be hearing about it a lot from now on. Well, the buzzword on everybody's lips this weekend is Watchmen, and it was apparently the highest-grossing movie for the weekend, which is kind of surprising, given the subject matter, given the nature of the material. Also, given the fact that of the multiple screens at our local theater, Watchmen only had two screens. Now, to be fair, none of the other movies at the theater had more than one screen, so I guess, you know, twice as many, right? All right, now when you're speaking Watchmen, you can't really separate the work from the name Alan Moore. However, that is part of the big controversy surrounding this show, was that Alan Moore had his name removed from the credits, and in fact, it was when the title sequences flashed through, you eventually get to Watchmen by co-creator Dave Gibbons, who is the illustrator, and published by DC Comics without a mention of Alan Moore in there at all. And Alan Moore has traditionally had a rocky relationship with the film industry anyway. He had some disagreements over the direction that was taken with V for Vendetta. Now, if you have seen the movie or read the book, you're probably in good shape because products by themselves, they're decent. Having both seen the movie and read the book, I have to say that I understand completely where Alan Moore was coming from with that film, and I'm completely on his side there. Now, with Watchmen, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree. I think they did. His concerns here were misplaced. And there was some rewriting of the story, particularly the ending, because the ending in the book revolves around a subplot that develops throughout the entire book. And in the movie, you've already got 3 hours, and to develop this subplot would take another half an hour, 45 minutes, and it's just huge. The compromise that they did for the movie was just fine with me. Now, having said that, the movie was incredibly faithful to the source material, at least I thought. All of the plot was there, all of the characters were handled faithfully, all of the representations were done very, very nicely. A huge, huge chunk of subplot was cut out of the movie. However, it was for time purposes, I'm certain, and I don't hold that against the film. It still made a great film. They also ramped up the superhero action because there is not a lot of superhero action in the book, and we get to see a couple of superhero fight scenes in the movie that just simply did not exist in the book. Plus the characters in the movie were a little more well adjusted in the movie than they were in the book. One of the things about The Watchmen, the graphic novel, is that none of these characters are exactly right. They are all broken, and in most cases, deeply broken. But I'll say this, the casting for the movie was absolutely perfect. I didn't really recognize anybody in the film except Max Headroom as Moloch, but there you go. But the casting was perfect. The costumes were perfect. The set designs on this film were just fantastic. The soundtrack was perfectly suited to the film and consisted mostly of very nostalgic pieces from Simon and Garfunkel and that 60s and 70s era of music. A little bit of swing and some of the flashbacks to the 40s era. But, mostly nostalgic stuff. Not a soundtrack I'm going to be buying, but I may consider buying the motion picture score. One of the surprising things they did was Dr. Manhattan's voice. In the comic book, he speaks and his voice is surrounded by a blue bubble. It's clearly got an unearthly quality to it. And I was curious as to how they were going to portray that in the film, and of course I expected, I'm sure many people did, them to go with a deep, resonant Darth Vader style voice. Instead, the character of Dr. Manhattan is a very soft-spoken, very quiet man, so that, and he never raises his voice, so that what we get is an actor who still portrays that same kind of unearthly quality, but just kind of runs that in under the radar. I was real surprised about the way they chose to do that, but also very pleased. Probably the only thing as far as digital production and stuff on the film that had me distracted at all is the makeup effects that they did for aging the characters, because several of the characters start out young, or are young in flashback sequences, and then you see them while they're old. And rather than doing doubles, they relied on makeup work to make the young actors look old. And for the most part, it was a flawless, impeccable job. There were one or two instances where the makeup just didn't look right. Of course, it didn't look quite right. Of course, it could have been just me. It is also very, very difficult for me to tell when Dr. Manhattan is a guy in blue makeup and when he is a CGI effect. I mean, there are a couple of instances where he is obviously CGI because people can't do those things. I think the main subtext of the book, which is the idea of escalation of conflict, is preserved in the film. However, I think many of the key executions are done differently. For instance, the communist threat, which is a large part of the book, is not as prominent, although still present, is not as emphasized in the film as is the presence of superheroes and a superhuman. Also a large part of the book, mind you, but not as preeminent as it is in the movie. Also, the threat of nuclear weapons and nuclear devastation is not is used more in the movie than perhaps the modern audience member is going to respond to. However, it is clearly set in a mid-80s time frame, and it's very appropriate to that time frame, especially for those of us who lived through that. The movie itself is largely deistic, which is that the possibility of God exists, but God is a distantly removed force from the physical world. Also, the omniscience of God is not dwelt upon or even accepted. In fact, Dr. Manhattan, who is our literary reference for God, is plainly states that he is not omniscient. He knows the past and future, but he only knows his own past and future. And in fact, the efforts of the main villain in the book are able to obscure the details of those events. Also, Dr. Manhattan has no innate understanding of the complexities of life or the complexities of human emotion, as he explains in a conversation with Silk Spectre. There is one point where he makes the comment that there is no difference between living people and dead people. There are the same amount of molecules in each one. They don't get into the creation versus evolution debate, because it's meaningless to the point of the story. But the fact that God exists and he is American is driven home heavily. And then God defines himself as somebody who is removed from humanity in such a way that he just simply cannot relate. And this is distinctly at odds with the Christian point of reference, which says that God is intimately involved with humanity. And where the point of salvation in the movie is the removal of God, of God's involvement in humanity in order to prevent them from destroying themselves while still maintaining the threat of his presence as a greater force. In the book, that the removal of God from humanity does not serve to save them, but only to allow them to save themselves. However, as in both cases, the means to that end is through, you know, treachery, deceit, and murder. So I think the literary core of the book is intact, and as far as that goes, I think it's a very faithful adaptation of the film. Perhaps too faithful. There were a couple of things that were done in the book that I would like to have seen changed. Most prominently, and, you know, almost exclusively, I'm going to have to say Dr. Manhattan's costuming. Now, this is a bit of a misnomer, as Dr. Manhattan spends almost the entirety of the story utterly naked. In the comic book, this is easy to bypass, as he is simply not illustrated in great detail. However, in the film, they took pains to illustrate in graphic and accurate detail the body of Dr. Manhattan, and I think I would have enjoyed the film more had they taken some effort to I don't know, had they done something to make that a little less brash, maybe, a little less in your face. I think the film would not have been hurt at all if he had preserved his nakedness and been, say, mannequin smooth rather than anatomically correct. For my own part, I found it quite distracting. It also means that under no circumstances am I going to be watching this film with my children, or my parents, or, you know, come to think of it, probably with anybody. It's just not, it just does not make for comfortable viewing. And there you have it. So, aside from the ubiquitous presence of Dr. Manhattan's electric blue manhood, I thought the film was a spectacular movie. I recommend the book instead of the movie for precisely that electric blue reason. But if you're more comfortable with that than I am, you will likely enjoy the film a great deal. Alright, well, that's really all I've got for you today. Thanks for tuning in and staying with me for this kind of rambling review. Again, I had a great time at Fear the Con, got to meet a whole lot of great people, and I'm looking forward to seeing it, doing it all again next year. Send me an email to mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com. Leave me a comment on the blog, or send me an MP3, and I'll play it on the show.
Water. We drink it. We bathe in it. We wash our clothes in it. We need it to grow crops. We take it for granted, yet for 1.1 billion people in the world, clean water is a luxury. Unclean water threatens the lives of billions of people every day, but most of us listening to this don't know what life without clean water would be like. Something as simple as a public water fountain is an oddity to many people. We buy clean water in a bottle for $1, and that same dollar could give a person clean water for an entire year. I'm John Wilkerson, host of the Jesus Geek Podcast. Will you join me in raising funds to provide clean water to people who desperately need it? Please visit water.jesusgeek.info for more information on how you can change someone's life with just $1 a day. That's water.jesusgeek.info. Give water and give life.